You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
College football, the NCAA, they can't get anything together. They can't agree on anything. And I would have hoped, you know, that maybe when the Pac-12 and Big Ten decided that they were going to come back in, maybe they could have said, hey, as extra incentive, because you can't play the number of games that the SEC and the ACC and Big 12, you can still qualify. And you have an extra incentive to be able to come back. You don't have to get all your games in. You have to get in enough in to pass the eye test. And I don't know who would be opposed to this, but we'll talk to Pat Forte about this coming up. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DP Show. It's been a rough week for college football. We'll talk about what's going on in the SEC with some cancellations, but they were building in for this. The same thing you're finding out with the NFL. They know it's not a question of if, but when it happens, and then you have to build in some breathing room here. And that's what the NFL is trying to do. The SEC thought that they would have this, where they might have postponements, and they just want to make sure they don't have cancellations. Same with the ACC and the Big 12. A lot has changed since Tiger Woods captured the Masters in 2019. That was last April. So you got 18 months ago that Tiger won, and he's the defending champ, although it doesn't feel like that. And it felt like at the time Tiger was going to make one more run at Jack Nicklaus's record for majors. But it didn't happen. Tiger didn't build any momentum. He's still at 15 and counting. That's three short of Jack's mark. And he's won only one tournament since then. And that was over a year ago. In the meantime, you got a new type of golfer who has arrived on the scene. Bryson DeChambeau, come on down. He's a force, redefining what golfers are able to do with length. Sound familiar? Because it was a couple of decades ago when a young Tiger Woods changed everything with his power. And then prior to that, it was a young Jack Nicklaus who was changing golf. I watched Shell's Wonderful World of Golf yesterday, and it was Sam Snead versus Jack Nicklaus at Pebble Beach. And I was just curious. Jack's playing with one of those persimmon woods, and you got to hit it right on the button to hit it far. And he was out driving Sam Snead, and Jack was around 23 years of age. Jack was hitting the ball over 300 yards at Pebble Beach. Now, I was just curious of how far he was hitting it on that course, because I played the course many times, and I wanted to see where Jack was hitting it back then when he was 23 years of age. And he ended up beating Sam Snead by one shot. He made a putt, birdie putt on the 18th hole. But Nicklaus back then was hitting it 290, 300 yards. Not a lot of other players were doing that. Now everybody hits it 300 yards. Bryson DeChambeau will hit a drive this week that will be 400 yards, in my opinion. He will be 9-iron wedge with a lot of these, not par fours, he's going to have that, but par fives, he might have a 9 or an 8-iron. That's not the way the course is meant to be played. You cut off corners, and he's going to have looks at eagles this week. Now, it still comes down to his wedge play, which is still suspect, in my opinion, and can he putt? But you go back to the U.S. Open when, you know, we had that at Wingfoot. He blew away everybody. He was 6 under par. Nobody was under par. He's going to try to take down this course and overpower it, but it's a tricky course. You think you can take it down with power. It still comes down to finesse. And those caddies, and I had a caddy who, he caddied for Seve when Seve Ballesteros won at Augusta. And I had him one day when I played. And he said, just listen to me. Because what you see and what I tell you are going to be two different things. And I go, okay, second hole, par five. He said, put it over here. I go, but he goes, I said, put it over here. And I go, okay. I put it over there and then rolled up by the hole. And then he just looked at me and he goes, don't do that again. And he was serious because he said it's an optical illusion. There are times when you look and you go, that can't be right. And it is. So Bryson DeChambeau, he has some experience there, but it always comes back to these guys who have played it 10, 15 times. And I'm talking about competitively. And there's something different about it. That local knowledge, that, you know, because they play this every year. And you can go down there prior to the tournament and you can play it. It's going to look the same. It won't sound the same. And I wonder about Tiger Woods this week, because even with that experience, that local knowledge there, is he healthy enough to win this? And Bryson DeChambeau is going to be fun to watch. But Tiger's dangerous on the course. Magical season or year moment in 2019. And he proved his doubters wrong. Can he prove his doubters wrong once again? Here's Tiger Woods reflecting back on a previous Masters that he won. He was talking about a couple of them. He got emotional talking about 2019.
You know, that was one of the most, I'm still getting chills just thinking about it. Feelings, you know, coming up 18 and, you know, to see my family there and my mom and my kids and all the people that helped support me or were there for me during the tough times. And I was walking up there just trying not to lose it and say, hey, I still got a two putt this. And then when I walked off the back of the green, you know, to see Charlie there and just open up our arms, and it meant a lot to me, and it still does. And just reminded me so much of me and my dad. And to come full circle like that, it still gives me, you know, a little teary.
That was an awesome moment. Because you go back to 1997, and he blew everybody away. And his dad said, look, he's special. Told us all along he's special. He proved he was special. And to see Tiger sort of fall into his father's arms and say, I did it for you. We did it together. And then you go full circle, 2019, he has his son who's there and able to celebrate with his dad. And where Tiger was the previous decade to get to that point is more amazing, I think, than what he did the first 10 years of his career. Because I always wondered, what would we remember? What's more amazing, what Tiger did the first 10 years or the next 10 years when he didn't do anything? And the second 10 was so surprising. He had injuries. He had issues, substance abuse. He had a lot of things going on. And then for him to win last year in April, remarkable. And I don't know where he's going to be. I don't know where he's going to be this year, next year, the year after that. You wonder if he didn't have any issues. Off the record, you know, off the course, all of those things. Like everything that happened, sort of happened, you heard happen. All of those stories. And even some stories that never went public that I would hear. He would have all the records. And he may still have all the records. But that body was going to break down eventually. I think everybody who was watching golf said, you can't have that kind of swing and have it last for a long time. And it broke down because you put so much pressure, so much torque on that left knee, and he eventually broke down. And he refused to modify his swing. He'd get out there and go, oh, he's got a bad back or he's got a bad this, and he'd swing out of his toes because his ego got the best of him. He saw these guys who were in diapers when he was bombing it, and all of a sudden he raised an entire generation of bombers, and he's probably looking around going, am I responsible for Bryson DeChambeau? Because Bryson DeChambeau basically said, I'm going to swing as hard as I possibly can. He said, I'm going to add 20 to 30 pounds. Like, he told everybody this and then went out and said, okay, now watch me. And he's hitting the ball farther than anybody. Those long drive champions have to be looking at Bryson DeChambeau going, maybe we need to subscribe to what he's doing. But Bryson DeChambeau is taking the long drive contest to the PGA Tour, and this week to Augusta. But we'll talk to Randall Chamblee about this, and I don't know if he agrees with me. But we know how Augusta is, the Masters, they control it. What you see, if there's commercials, we're going to be commercial-free, whether we let in minorities, let in women, whatever it might be. Augusta controls their own little world there. And I think one day Augusta goes, if you play here, you must play with the ball that is up to our modifications. Because TaylorMade is still going to have their golf ball and Callaway and Titleist. But I'm wondering if Augusta says, to play this event, your golf ball must comply with our standards here. Because I would hate to see that golf course be brought to its knees. I love seeing Augusta Sunday back nine. And you hear the birdies. Now, and I'm talking about literally you hear the birdies, but you also hear the roar of those who make the birdies or watching those who make the birdies You never want to lose that. It's one of the magical sounds in all of sports. Sunday at the Masters, the final nine. And I just wonder what's going to happen if it's just going to be target practice in the next 5 years. What are those scores at Augusta going to look like? And Bryson DeChambeau is going to be pretty much the litmus test to go, all right, you can hit it 350, 400 yards. Like, there are certain holes where you go, how is he hitting it there and has that to the green? And I'm not saying I'm a good golfer, but I know where you have to hit it, how far you have to hit it, and then what you have in as your next shot. It's remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. And those par fives, yes, a lot of them you can go in two. The risk and the reward there. And I wonder if they start to do things for the risk and the reward at Augusta. Maybe modify the ball and maybe make it a little bit more penal if you hit it, you know, off center. But that's the key. You can hit it 350, but are you in play when you hit it 350? And if he hits it 350 in play, and he's got wedges and nine irons and eight irons in there, and everybody else has a six or a five, it's a huge difference. But you have to make your putts there. I don't care how far you hit it. You got a great wedge play, and you got to be able to putt. And that'll be fun. But I'm all for the modern athlete and technology. I understand all of those things. I think you got to be careful. Too much of a good thing. It's like baseball when baseball juiced up the baseballs. Did you need to? No, you didn't. But they did. And then they realized, and we're kind of making a mockery of this thing here. How about we're going to buy Rawlings, and we're going to create our own plant there, make our own balls there. Too much of a good thing? I always worry about that. Yeah, Paul.
Going back to DeChambeau, he's aware of what happened to Tiger Woods with his back injuries and getting too big for your body with the sport. Do you think a guy like him thinks, well, I'd rather have a great 5 or 6 year run and see what happens on the back end of it than just plod along and be a good golfer? It appears that he's got to be aware of what being that big can do to your body long term as a golfer, but maybe he's going for that 5 year window of let's get some majors.
Well, he's into science. He's into technology, analytics, and I'm sure he's even thought about that of what's this going to do to my body. But if you watch him swing, we've all gotten up there and tried to swing as hard as possible. And it always felt the harder that I was swinging, the worse the result was. There's something about, and watching this show, Wonderful World of Golf, with Sam Snead, who I think has the greatest swing of all time. And, Jack was, I mean, he's a force. At 23, Jack was swinging out of his shoes. And Sam Snead was 40 or 50 yards behind Jack Nicklaus on some of these holes. But Sam Snead won, 80 times on the tour. I played with him. We were outside of Roanoke, Virginia, and I went to visit him to do an interview with Sam Snead. And he was, I guess, in his 70s maybe. We went to the driving range. It was magical. It was so special to watch him. He had the most fluid swing. He was a great athlete. And he'd say, what do you want? You want a low draw? I'll give you a low draw. He had a six iron. You want a high fade? I'll give you a high fade. It was just easy for him to do. And he played until, I think competitively, close to 70 years of age. But Bryson DeChambeau, that's the new athlete. And we'll see how Augusta stands up to him. If Augusta is able to do that. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. We got three MAC games coming up tonight. Bama, LSU, A&M, Tennessee postponed this weekend. There's a few other games that were postponed this weekend. Give you the full list. Auburn, Mississippi State, Memphis Navy, Air Force, Wyoming, and Louisiana Monroe and Arkansas State. Those are just the ones as of today. Here Wednesday morning at 9:15 in the morning. And you know what? Schools are going back to Halloween. They're, you know, when you have the contact and you're tracing, schools are going back to Halloween parties and saying that's the new wave here. That's the new wave of positive test here. They go back to Halloween. And then you had 7 days later and the interaction and then what's happening on school campuses around the country. And as you move forward, is it going to get better? Because, you know, a lot of these schools are saying after Thanksgiving, you go home. Before Thanksgiving, you go home. You don't come back until late January, early February. And you might be able to get all these other games in because it goes back to the summer where you're sort of quarantining these football players. But, you know, it just feels like all of these conferences are holding their breath because they didn't build in too much of a margin for error here. SEC did. But I don't know if they're going to be able to extend this window a little bit if you start to lose some games here, because that is the big convenience the SEC has and the ACC and the Big 12 to be able to play all their games, where we don't even know if Wisconsin, I assume they're playing against Michigan this weekend, but Ohio State can't have a hiccup. And it's not necessarily Ohio State, it's the team that they will be playing, because they need all the games they can play, because you have to say to that committee, hey, look, we dominate. You only played six games. Yeah, but we dominated in those games. And trying to get a true test, like somebody in the Pac-12, I don't know if Oregon is going to be able to play enough games to, you know, grab the attention of the selection committee. But boy, I wish we had eight teams in. I'm really, this year, of all years, and we could go back to four. I just think this year is screaming out for eight, because not everybody's going to play the same number of games. And it would be great to have BYU in there or Cincinnati in there. You know, A&M's got a loss. They probably can't get in the Final Four. I'm wondering if A&M, would they play BYU at the end of the year? Would they just schedule them and say, look, we'll help you, you help us. Whoever wins might get into the Final Four. I mean, BYU will play anybody. They'll go anywhere. And if I'm A&M, hey, come on in. A&M will say, come on in, we'll play you. I don't know who wants to play BYU, but or Cincinnati. How do we get into the Final Four? Is there a way to do that? Can we go outside and schedule an opponent? I think you got to keep an eye on that as well. So Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated will join us on the college football postponements. Brandel Chamblee and from the Golf Channel. If you could only watch, is that the poll question, McLovin? If you could only watch one this week, Tiger or Brandel Chamblee?
That is the hour two poll question.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Because I put something up this morning.
Okay.
Just to strengthen your case.
Okay.
Are you in favor of an 18 playoff just this year? And I feel like if we can get that up to like 95%, we can send that to the SEC and say, give us our eight teams.
So we're going to fix the polls. I don't think that's a good thing to do in today's climate.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We probably don't want to do that. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. The popular Pat Forty, one of the great college football writers in America, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, back on the program. I came up with a stupid idea yesterday, Pat. I thought the Pac-12 is bordering on being irrelevant this season and maybe in future seasons. Why not play games on Wednesday night? Like, own a day so people are watching your product, commenting on your product. It's like when you play Thursday night, you may be a bad football team, but people are seeing the Giants on Thursday night play against, you know, the Buccaneers or the Patriots. Why can't, I mean, playing at 9 a.m. local time, West Coast, is that kind of the game plan?
Well, you know, I think they're looking at all options right now because they are in a difficult situation. But the one thing, Dan, that I think the Pac-12 would have to get its arms around is saying, we're not as good as the other Power Five conferences, so we have to go to a gimmick. And that's hard from an ego standpoint and a prestige standpoint to say, yeah, we're now at the point we got to schedule like the MAC and like the Sun Belt and look for another night to play or another day to play. You know, if you're right, though, if you look like the Friday night games, the Big Ten has started to put one game on Friday night. The ACC has had some Friday night games. Those get attention. Those get a lot of commentary. You know, I think that Friday for sure, although it impinges on high school sports and you kind of get that gets a little tricky, but I think Friday is a viable option. Thursday, yes, although you're butting up against the NFL on Thursday nights. I think going forward, as people try to recoup tens of millions of dollars in lost revenue, they're going to be looking at all options.
Did the selection committee at least do a drive-by with an 18 playoff at any point this year?
I don't know if they have. They've kept it under the lid, so to speak. They, you know, this would have been a year to try to break the mold and say, what can we do here to have a more meaningful playoff, more inclusive, and more lucrative. I don't know whether they ever actually seriously considered it. To the best of my knowledge, no. If they did, they didn't acknowledge it. You know, and that's these people. Well, the people that run the playoff are the people who run college football, the conference commissioners. They are so averse to change, as we know. It only took 145 years to have a playoff, so I'm not sure they're ready to go to 8 yet.
But there's money here. These athletic departments need the money. If you said to Greg Sankey, all right, you may not get Georgia in this year, but you're going to have Alabama, and if we do 8, you could get Texas A&M in there as well. You might get a Pac-12 team like Oregon, BYU could get in, Cincinnati could get in. To me, it's good for college football. Why would somebody vote against this?
Yeah, well, I mean, especially you're right that if you're the Pac-12 or the Big 12 and you're figuring to be left out, I would be banging on the table every day for an expanded playoff. You know, here's the thing. It was this year, obviously, the calendar being what it was and the Big Ten starting late and the Pac-12 starting late, they're basically out of weeks. And you go to the TV folks and you say, okay, well, can we just push everything back and have a bigger playoff? They're going to say no, because then you're getting in the way of the NFL playoffs, and we care more about the NFL playoffs than we care about the college playoffs. So I think that was basically – they ran out of TV inventory real estate, so to speak, this year. Now, in the future – I mean, I'm with you. If I'm in one of these conferences that is habitually being left out, my job every day as commissioner would be, let's expand the playoff.
How concerning is it that you have these postponements in the SEC this weekend?
Oh, it is. You know, I mean, they were the league that it was obviously been the most gung-ho to play. They forged through the first 2 or 3 weeks with no problems. And, you know, they're going to keep going, but you're losing games and you're losing chances to reschedule games. And eventually there's probably going to be an impact on the conference standings and how things play out there. But you have lost 3 games this week. May still lose a 4th. We'll see. Missouri was making some noises about having some COVID issues that could possibly jeopardize their game against Georgia. So, you know, it's catching up with everybody at some point in time. And it's just a question of how what the impact is in terms of how the rest of the season plays out.
Wisconsin, Michigan still on, right?
Wisconsin, Michigan is still on. Wisconsin has come out of their hibernation, so to speak, and we'll see how many players they have. We'll see what they look like. It's been interesting. I did have a stat this week that teams that have had 2 or more weeks off actually have a winning record when they come back, 9-7. It has not been a real negative impact to have 2 weeks off.
How do you assess who's good?
That's the best question. I don't know. I mean, and that's the committee I wrote about this. It's going to be a lot of look test, I think. And that's why, I look at BYU. I think BYU is very good. Their competition hadn't been that great, but you say, I know a good team when I see one. Do they deserve a shot? Well, maybe, maybe not. Well, Wisconsin, okay, you're going to play 6 games. Is that enough of a metric? Coastal Carolina's undefeated, Marshall, Liberty, all those teams, do they deserve a shot? I don't know how you figure this out this year. I really, really don't.
And also, we have to hand out a Heisman, right? We have to.
We do.
Yeah. Can Trevor Lawrence still win the Heisman?
Sure. Yeah, I think he can. You know, I mean, last year Chase Young was a finalist despite missing at least 1, maybe 2 games, I'm trying to remember. In a shortened season, it does matter, but he was really good when he was playing. If they come back and they run the table the rest of the way and he keeps playing the way he did, I expect him to be a finalist. I was going to say be in New York City, but I don't think they're probably going to have an actual ceremony in New York City. So, but yeah, Trevor Lawrence can still win the Heisman, sure.
Can you see where Notre Dame joins the ACC full-time in football?
You know, I mean, I think that they'll have some consideration on it after this year because it's been good for them.
Yeah.
You know, it really has. It saved their season for one thing. And, I mean, it's brought a lot of attention to be in a conference race and to have that championship game it looks like they're going to make now at the end of the year. I think that it'll be good under consideration. I still think that everything about Notre Dame and what they want to be will say, no, don't do it. But I wouldn't be shocked if Jack Swarbrick, the athletic director, is in there saying, this has been pretty good and pretty easy.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting here these next couple of weeks, trying to get to a Final Four. And you know, as a source told me about the Big Ten, it's trying to pass the sight test. Ohio State just wants to dominate here, and no matter who they're playing, just dominate. Wisconsin's not going to get that opportunity. And then you got Michigan now at 0-3, so that's not a quality win for an opponent. Yep. Harbaugh's future there with one more year left on his contract, would they cut ties a year early?
I don't think the school would. You know, maybe Jim would if he decides he wants to take another shot at the NFL. I mean, you look at his NFL record, it's pretty darn good. I would think, you know, people may view him as damaged goods, but he's got a winning record in the NFL. And, I mean, you know, there's some people employed there that are not as good as Jim Harbaugh. So I would think if he wants to go, if he finally just says, it's not going to happen, we're not going to return to glory, we're never going to beat Ohio State, I'm out of here, that might happen. I don't think Michigan would say, you're out. But we'll see. Things could still get worse. You know, I mean, that's, you lose to Wisconsin this week. You get pummeled by Ohio State at the end. There's plenty of losable games out there. I mean, that's the state of the Big Ten is so bizarre right now. I mean, Northwestern Purdue is like the big game of the weekend.
Can Indiana stay with Ohio State?
We'll see. I don't think they quite – I'm not sure their defense can hold up. Okay. You know, I really like their team. They're fun. They throw it. They catch it. They can score. I'm just not sure defensively they can slow down Justin Fields and those receivers and the running backs.
It's amazing that we're talking about Indiana in a positive way.
Yeah, you know, unprecedented.
Yeah. And I had a source who said, you know, it's really – an NFL scout who said, look, it's really hard to assess Ohio State quarterbacks because the talent is so great. And if you're looking at Dwayne Haskins, it's a one-year, hey, what did you see there? Cardale Jones. And now you have Justin Fields there.
Yep.
Have you seen, like, hey, I know this guy's going to be really good here, and it's an Ohio State quarterback.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a legitimate question. I mean, I think Justin Fields is very good. I don't just... And look, I am not a scout, but I don't think he's as good as Trevor Lawrence. I'm not sure he's as good as Zach Wilson at BYU, who's really good and really fun. But that's the thing. The offense is so good. The scheme is great. The players around him are great. How much does he really have to do? We'll see. You know, I mean, I thought he was very, very good for the most part, like against Clemson. You know, when you're matched up against excellent talent, excellent coaching in a big game, but he had some turnovers in that game. Still, I think Justin Fields is certainly going to be a first-round pick. We'll see how high. But there is an element of, yeah, are we drafting a guy who everyone around him makes him look better than he is?
Good to visit with you, Pat. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time as always.
My pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
Pat Forty, senior writer covering college sports for Sports Illustrated.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Tiger has his Masters Champions dinner. Shrimp tempura roll with spicy tuna, tempura flakes, and eel sauce. Prime steak. Chicken fajitas. Dessert is churros with chocolate sauce, flan, and sopapillas. Wine is a 2015 Schaefer Red Shoulder Ranch Chardonnay, a $60 bottle there. Okay, that's not bad. I mean, I might skip the shrimp tempura, may just go with the prime steak there.
I thought you liked sushi. You used to be a big sushi guy.
Yeah, I don't like the eel sauce on there. But
what if it's optional?
I'd probably bring my own wine in. I mean, the Schaefer Red Shoulder Ranch Chardonnay. I'm not drinking a Chardonnay with steak. I'm going to load up on a nice cab here. I'm going to be bringing in some contraband there to the Masters Champions dinner. That's coming up tonight. Yes, Paulie.
Now, we have our Masters meals here. Mine's pretty standard.
Wait, you guys have your... If you were a Masters champ, what would your meal be?
Though it's unlikely, yes.
Does that mean Todd has his?
Yeah, I sure do.
We all do.
Yeah, but knowing Todd, I don't think these golfers could be able to play the next day.
They would have to reschedule it for about a month later.
I don't know if they'd feel that well if they were having your
not
meal.
Totally unhealthy.
If they were 12, they would go, this is a great meal.
Quarter pounder of cheese.
Mountain Dew. All right, Paulie, what do you have for your Masters champion meal?
I'm going real specific, Dan. Crawfish pie from a restaurant called Cushon in New Orleans. I'm having it flown in.
Oh.
Country fried steak, mashed potatoes, jalapeno cornbread, Ajax Diner in Oxford, Mississippi. Great place, right in the town square. Bread pudding from Killen's Barbecue.
But I don't think you can import. They make everything there. They've got an unbelievable restaurant there.
If I'm the Masters champ, I'm importing.
All right.
And then Killen's Barbecue down in Pearland, Texas, bread pudding.
Because when I played Augusta, did I tell you I played Augusta a couple of times?
81,
there?
83.
80, 83, first day, 81, second day, Paulie.
Sevy Ballesteros.
Yeah, I had his caddy. And I go into the grill room, and the person I'm with says, you can order whatever you want, you know, and if it's not on the menu, they'll make it for you. And I said, all right, how about steak and pesto? I wanted some pesto pasta. Chef comes out and he goes, who ordered the pesto? And I go, I did. He goes, awesome. And then he went back because I don't know what people normally order there, but he wanted something that was a little bit more of a challenge. They took us down. The member that we played with took us down into the wine cellar. And not many people get to go down there, but like Eisenhower had big bottles of wine down there that were under, like there were names in wine racks. And then
he's not going to drink those now, by the way.
And he's not. And I said, why don't we take this upstairs and polish this off? Ike would love this. And you had all this wine down there. And what happened was, I'm told that a member said years and years and years ago, hey, we don't have a wine cellar. He got a letter soon after that to say, hey, you're responsible for paying for the wine cellar.
Oh, you complain?
Well, he just brought it up and they said, hey, great idea. Here's your assessment. You have to, you're going to pay for the wine cellar. Todd, give me your list if you were the Masters champ.
All right, I'm going with the Waldorf salad because I like the little cranberries, nuts, apples, grapes. I think it's a nice salad to get things going. Yeah. Pizza, bagels, and egg rolls for an appetizer. You can have a couple of each there, help yourself, or you can just do one or the other. Chicken parm with penne pasta and garlic bread.
Now, the pizza, bagels, and egg rolls from the frozen food section?
I'd rather it be homemade, but okay. If they're busy in the kitchen back there in Augusta, I mean, we can pick it up at the local grocer.
The entree?
Chicken parm with penne pasta and garlic bread. We'll give a good entree. And my favorite dessert, spumoni tartufo, that chocolate bomb, that shell that you break, and inside the chocolate shell is the spumoni, and everyone gets a bag of Hershey miniatures with
them. And what are we drinking? What kind of wine?
We are drinking Dr. Brown's Black Cherry or Mountain Dew or Yoo-Hoo or your choice of Grape Orange or Fruit Punch High C.
All right. Yeah, Paul?
And based off this menu, the Augusta Applebee's will be hosting the meal.
Pretty much.
And Augusta Medical Center is standing by.
Yeah, I'd have mine really simple. Nice wedge salad. I have a great steak, some pesto pasta, and dessert would be wine.
No actual dessert, just a glass of wine for dessert.
Well, wine throughout.
Okay.
And then I would just say maybe bourbon for dessert.
A little bread pudding with bourbon. I thought that's been done before.
Yeah. Yes, McLovin.
I'm going to pitch a dessert that it's totally unhealthy, but milkshakes. Everybody loves milkshakes. Can you imagine if a milkshake was popped
out?
Not
after a steak dinner.
Well, like you eat it with hamburgers, red meat. I don't know.
Maybe a hamburger, but not a porterhouse steak.
Yeah, you're right. Porterhouse.
Like a milkshake. I don't know the last time I had a milkshake.
Yeah. You know where they bring that metal container with the milkshake in?
Oh. Yeah, when you hear that. Yes, Todd.
You're also mixing the meat with the dairy, so to the Jewish golfers, they might not be able to participate in the steak and then have the milkshake after that. So you got to be sensitive to everybody on the field there.
Thank you, Todd. Yes, Paul.
If Bryson DeChambeau wins, it's going to be an 8,000-calorie protein powder shake with a bench press for dessert.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. Brandel Chambly, Golf Channel analyst, joining us on the program. What do you think of that logic there? We have a keg, White Castle, and I take my chances.
You just made me hungry. Who doesn't like White Castle? I mean, normally I've had them at 2:30 in the morning. I've actually never had them at dinner time, so I assume they're pretty darn good then too.
I don't think anybody's ever had White Castles before like 10 o'clock at night. It always feels like
right.
You know,
right. I can remember having bacon cheeseburgers at 2:30 in college from Jack in the Box. Never eaten it since, but it was the best damn meal I ever had in my life. And I mean, I'm probably just like 2,000 calories in the thing, but. Man, they were good.
Anybody ever have any strange eating habits on the course when you played, what they had in their bag?
Well, there used to be a fellow that, well, you know who Mark Lai is. He still does radio or whatever. But, you know, he was a diabetic. So he had to eat constantly when he played. And this was back before there were power bars or anything like that. So he would have, you know, all kinds of things wrapped up in tin foil, and he'd be unwrapping them pretty much every hole. So you'd have to just back away and go, you know, what are you doing? It's just like an all day buffet trot, you know. That was about it. I can't remember any odd eating habits on the golf course.
But there are guys who snuck in liquor when they played.
Oh, I know a few players that that had, you know, they were all always had a Coke can with them. And, you know, there were I know a few players that won, you know, probably past the legal limit. You know, they could play pretty good. They were like you. You know, you said you could handle your beer. I know a few players that could handle theirs.
But is this to calm your nerves?
Well, one player in particular who's an absolute legend. He was in, I'm not going to name him, but he was in a playoff once with Jack Nicklaus. And he ducked into the bathroom, okay, and two or three times during this playoff, and then you know he you know they finally played on, and I believe John. Well, there you go. I didn't say. And look, it's not the last name you think, okay? So he prevailed.
Boy, you can keep a secret, Randall.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's so bad, isn't it? I forgot. Nobody else is listening, right?
It's just no, you and me, no, right? No, no, no. We're not even back on the air right now.
Right, that's what I thought. Yeah. We're always meant to act like we're just sitting around talking, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we welcome you back to the Dan Patrick Show.
No, don't do that. So anyway, afterwards, Jax went up to, you know, the guy who's one buddy, right? And he said, "I'm worried that he's drinking." And my buddy, you know, he started laughing. He was like, "Jack, he never stopped drinking."
Wow.
But he was a terrific fella and a hell of a player. And, yeah, he had a few pops from time to time.
All right, the Bryson DeChambeau bet that I have, you can either take him to win or he misses the cut. But the you get your straight-up bet. Let's say you put $1,000 on him to win. You get $10,000 if he misses the cut. Which one would you take?
Oh, I'd go for the win. I can't even come up with any scenario where he's not a factor in this event. You know, if he drives it any semblance like he did at the U.S. Open, and by all accounts, he's 20, 30 yards longer than he was then, which is preposterous. You know, he's going to be chipping to so many of these greens. Yeah. He's going to be hitting wedges to the par fives, and he's a much, much better putter than he was, you know, last year at this time. He's 10th. He was 10th in 2020 in strokes gained putting with that length. So I'd go for the win. I don't see anybody getting that $10,000, Dan.
Do you think it's his to lose?
Yes, actually. That's a good question. Yes, I do. You know, did you hear Tiger yesterday in the media center? Tiger said of Bryson that he's doing things that nobody has ever done in the history of the game. I mean, that would be like, that'd be like Shakespeare saying another writer could really turn a phrase.
But what's the downside? Any downside to Bryson DeChambeau, this style, this philosophy?
Well, I would have said, you know, he likes to swing in to out on it. And I would have said, historically, players who swing in to out have trouble off of the side heel lies at Augusta National. So the great players are cutting it off those sort of hook lies. They're picking it and cutting it, getting it up in the air.
But Bryson, Nicklaus.
Yeah, like Jack and Tiger and even, you know, Jordan Spieth is the perfect example. And Justin Thomas is the perfect example of somebody who could do that. But Bryson hits it past all those spots where that would be an issue, like miles past it. Like he could hit it 30, 40 yards past Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka. Like, it's, I've never seen anything like this.
But how do you explain that? Because every weekend golfer is swinging out of their shoes now, Brandel.
Yeah.
How do you get length, and then how do you add even more length to it when you're a professional?
Yeah, the thing is, there was so much room for added distance in this game. You think about it. I've made this analogy, but years ago, you know, you tune in, you watch Nolan Ryan. And, you know, they were kind of guessing, but they're like, he's throwing at 105 miles an hour. And you could assume that nobody else in the world could throw a baseball harder than that. But you tune into a golf tournament, you see Tiger Woods hitting a shot, and he's swinging 124 miles an hour. Well, there are scores of people that could swing way faster than that. Scores in the game. Long drive guys. What Bryson did was he studied the long drive guys, and he tapped into their movements. Okay, because there was clearly room to swing the club 20 miles an hour faster amongst the best professional golfers. But everybody dismissed the long drive guys as freaks or they couldn't play golf. But what Bryson did was he watched the long drive guys, really studied it from a biomechanics standpoint, their movements, and incorporated those movements. But then, and this was the coup de grace, really, he added elements of the straightest hitters of all time. Because they do very specific things just like long drive guys do. And then he meshed those two. And that's the holy grail. And that's why, you know, normally when guys get paired with Tiger or Phil, you see them walking down the fairway and they're always turned looking at Tiger or Phil, and Tiger or Phil are never looking at them. And they're just kind of walking ahead. When you see Tiger or Phil get paired with Bryson, Bryson's walking down the fairway, Tiger and Phil are turned looking at Bryson. And trying to soak up everything that this guy knows, because clearly he's tapped into something that nobody else has tapped into in the game of golf, professional game of golf.
I'm wondering, though, Bryson, you know, how Augusta, the Masters, they control everything. Do they get to the point where they say you have to have a golf ball that is to our specifications to play this course? I just worry about courses becoming antiquated because of, you know, equipment, the golf ball, you know, the golfer, I understand, but the equipment and the golf ball is changing the sport. Could you see the Masters in 5 years from now, when how many golfers are going to try to incorporate what Bryson DeChambeau is doing, whether they do it correctly or not? And you know, those par fives, some of those aren't meant to be had in two, or at least you don't have a wedge in there. And that's what's going to happen here.
Listen, not 5 years, 5 months from now, they might be playing gutta percha and hickories when they come back. Yeah. Because, I mean, what Bryson is on the cusp of doing this week, what he could very well do is, and I've argued against people who say that the ball should be rolled back because, you know, the same things still matter in the game, strategy, long drive, I mean, long irons, all those things.
Yeah.
But what Bryson could do was literally obliterate the integrity of this design. I mean, drive and chip to greens and drive wedges to par fives. I've never thought the argument was really on that sort of solid foundation until Bryson came along. So what are you going to do if you run this event? And obviously the USGA and the RNA governing bodies, they have many, many different factors to consider, but the Masters is in a position where they can just unilaterally say, okay, we're going to have a tournament ball.
Yeah.
Scale things back a bit.
Yeah.
But then, you know, if you scale it back to where Bryson is the one who is struggling to get on these par fives and two, nobody else in the game could get on these par fives and two. Like, nobody else. So then it's not very interesting. So it's what do you do? You know, how do you combat this where the golf is still compelling? Because right now, I think we can all agree, the Masters has a pretty good history of producing compelling events with the formula they have.
We're talking to Brandel Chamblee, golf champ. You wish I was saying Bryson DeChambeau.
I really, really do.
How far would he outdrive you at your best when you were playing?
He would outdrive me by 100 yards. You know, if I pop one now, if I really pop one, I might get it 290. But more, you know, right around there. He's going to hit, he carried it 362 the other day. On the range. One swing, carried it 362. That's going to roll 400.
I know. That's why I said to start the show, he'll hit drives of 400 yards at Augusta. And now, I know it's a little wet there, conditions.
Yeah.
But how's it going to look and sound tomorrow?
You know, if you can probably find it online if you haven't already seen it, but you can find him hitting this shot 2 days ago on the range. And I mean, it sounded like a cannon. It really did. I mean, it really did. I replayed it, you know, I don't even know. I probably watched it like 50 times. And I couldn't believe the sound of it. And, you know, he backed away and you could hear the person videotaping it saying, was that 200? What, meaning the ball speed, was it 200? He has a machine there that measures it instantly. And he was like, oh yeah, 201. And I mean, I can remember hitting balls next to Tiger Woods at the 2000 US Open. Tiger played all right in that event. Okay. Now on Tuesday, I'm hitting balls next to him. He's right behind me hitting balls and I'm grinding away. You know, I'm not paying attention to Tiger. I'm dumb enough to think I got a chance or whatever. My buddy is there watching me and he says, hey, stop. Hey. And I said, what? He goes, if you don't turn around and watch what's happening behind you, you will have missed the greatest show ever. This is Tuesday. So I turn around and I watch him, you know, and the sound of it, right? And the flight of it and the power and the grace, you know, I just never heard anything like that. And I watched him for like 20, 30 minutes, completely forgot what I was doing. Then he walked away. And then the next shot I hit, I swear it sounded like I hit a wiffle ball. And it looked like I hit a wiffle ball. And I was like, I feel impotent. You know, it's like, what am I even doing? Why did I watch that? That's like following, you know, I remember reading once where Billy Crystal said he thought he was a really funny guy. And he got invited to go to this gig, right? He was slaying it everywhere. And he's standing in the wings and he's listening to this guy on the stage. And he's like, this is the funniest human being I've ever heard. I suck. I am not funny. That guy's funny. And he had to follow Robin Williams. Yeah. And he was like, you know, you what are you going to do? And it's like, I watched Tiger and I thought, what? We're not even playing the same game. I think he beat me by 35 shots that week.
Tiger's chances this week are what?
Not great. You know,
top 10, top 15.
Hey, listen, I've learned on your show to never say never. Okay. That is,
you did learn the hard way. Yeah.
Tiger just did that to me.
Yes,
right?
He did.
I mean, and it was great to see. I did occasionally, I don't know if I did on your show, add the caveat that I hope I'm wrong. And if anybody could prove me wrong, it was Tiger. And he certainly did. You know, the Masters has a way of providing Hail Marys to great stars. You know, Jack had one. Ben Crenshaw had maybe the greatest Hail Mary I've ever seen in golf. Tiger had a bit of a one last year, but he was playing fine golf coming in here. So you could kind of sense it. He's hitting it, you know, he's the last time he was out, Dan, at Zozo at Sherwood, his club head speed had dropped to 113 miles an hour. That's tour average. Mm-hmm. And he's not really picked up any accuracy to sort of offset that decay in his club head speed. So, you know, again, I don't know, you'd know this. So like great athletes, it's really hard to point at the part where they are not physically capable of doing what they're eminently capable of doing mentally. And it's Tiger's not there yet. You know, it happens like incrementally. And, you know, he's lost a little clubhead speed from last year. He still had pop last year. You know, he drove it past Finau last year on the 17th hole coming in. And it surprised Tiger. And afterwards he said, you know, I ramped up my clubhead speed. So maybe that adrenaline rush happens this week. But he's going to need that clubhead speed as wet as it is.
Do you think last year's Masters was the last one for Tiger?
I am not going to say that, Dan. I'm not as dumb as you think I am, Dan. I mean, I'm close. I'm really close, but I'm not that dumb. He's at 82. He's going to get another one.
Great to talk to you. We'll be watching live from the Masters. Tell Rich and company that we said hello, and thanks for joining us again, Randall.
I'll do it. And don't share our secret that we're talking about.
No,
guy drinking, okay?
Nobody.
All right, that's just between you and me.
Yes, indeed.
Talk to you later.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Who is starting off the snake draft, Paul?
Here is the order of the Masters draft. It's Todd first, then you, then Seton, then Perloff, then me. For two picks, then back down the line.
Okay. Todd?
Because it's 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, I'm going with Ricky Fowler as my number one pick.
So on brand.
Yeah.
I love it.
I have to take Bryson DeChambeau. Absolutely. It has nothing to do with any holiday 2 weeks prior to anything. I just figure, all right, the fascination, I'll buy in. I don't think he'll win, but I will take Bryson DeChambeau. Who's next?
Seton
O'Connor.
I am going to take Xander Schauffele.
Xander Schauffele is off the board. Paulie, who...
Actually, next up, Andrew.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah, when he said Perloff, I'm not sure. That's my name, actually. I don't know if you...
No, Paulie rigged the draft so he'd be the last guy on the snake draft.
Okay, I'll go... Okay, I'm going to go Justin Thomas, full well knowing that I'm going to get my guy on the way back because Paulie just dissed him.
All right. Paulie...
I'm going to go back-to-back, John Rahm, Brooks Koepka.
All right.
John Rahm, Brooks Koepka.
All right.
Tasty.
Next, McLovin?
I'll go Dustin Johnson.
All right. Paulie Ester? Seton?
Is Rory McIlroy still available?
Yes, he is.
I'm going to take Rory.
All right.
Fritzy's going to take Stuffing Wilson out of University of Tennessee.
I got something in my back pocket yet.
So DeChambeau, Johnson, Rahm, Justin Thomas. Is Justin Thomas still on the board?
I took Justin Thomas.
You took Justin Thomas. Rory is off, Xander Schauffele, Brooks Koepka, and then it's everybody else after that. I am going to take the irritable Patrick Reed. Irritable.
The universally disliked.
Yes, Patrick Reed. Reed. And Todd, you finish off.
And also, because it's 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, I'm going with Matthew Hungry Like the Wolf.
I hope you win, Todd.
Matthew Wolf?
Yeah.
Hungry Like the Wolf.
Hungry Like the Wolf. All right. So we did it. Masters Draft brought to you by Callaway. Yes, McLovin.
Can we do two more rounds?
No,
I got guys left on my board.
No.
I've been reading good things about Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah. No.
Cameron. Champ.
Nobody took Tiger. That's my only concern here. Did anyone want to take Tiger just to root for him?
Do you guys want to do one more round?
Yes.
Okay, but, you know, this counts for your score. I mean, Tiger can be sentimental. If he doesn't make the cut, then you lose out on that. Let me see. Todd, you're up next.
All right. Also going with the Thanksgiving theme, since we're doing one more round. I just came up with this on the fly. A lot of times you're stuffing your face with turkey, and then you need a break, and you lie on the couch for a little while from the tryptophan, watch some. Then you go get some more. Tony, for now, I'm full.
No, it's Fino.
But that doesn't work, that pronunciation for me. For now, I'm done eating, but I'm going to go have seconds a little while. Tony, for now.
I don't even have any odds in front of me here. Let me see. Who else do we have in here? Because I don't have any. Man, somebody took Patrick Cantlay. Let me see. What else can I do here?
Colin Morikawa available. I think Patrick Cantlay is available, Dan.
Oh, he is?
I think so.
Oh, I'll take Patrick Cantlay to block. Yeah.
Is Brooks Koepka available?
No.
Oh. Is Colin Morikawa available?
Yes.
I'll take him.
All right. McLovin?
You know, I would like to wash out my Thanksgiving meal with Justin Rose or maybe have a, what's his name, Tommy Burger? Whose burger? Daniel Berger.
Daniel Berger. Wait, are you taking Justin Rose or Daniel Berger?
Bubba Watson.
No, I have Bubba.
Tiger Woods.
All right. We're a mess. Paulie?
Justin Rose.
Thomas Fleetwood, please. Thomas right. Fleetwood coming down.
Okay, here he is.
Awesome.
All right. All right, more phone calls coming up. Who's tabulating this? Who's writing this down? Is Mario?
We didn't decide the rules yet. Is it strokes?
No, it's under. Yeah, it's strokes.
Not money.
How many strokes under par?
So what happens if a guy doesn't make the cut?
You don't get anything.
You don't get anything or you get his score?
You don't get anything. It's the number of shots under par total that you are.
How about a penalty if you miss the cut? Like you tack on a couple.
Like we execute you? Like we chop off a finger?
Yeah.
Well, we need to come up with a rule. Well, there's nothing really at stake. And we got to figure this out before there's drama.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
some basketball news that's come up. And, you know, I wondered about Russell Westbrook, if he would be traded or James Harden would be traded. Like, what's the future of the Rockets here? Chris Paul has been on the market. I felt like Milwaukee, if Milwaukee had Chris Paul, I valued him so much that I thought that they would be the team to beat in the East. They would be playing in the NBA Finals. I thought that he would have made that much of a difference. And now there's talk that maybe the Phoenix Suns are interested in Chris Paul. And he's a got a big price tag here. He's got a, two more years where he's going to get paid 80-some million dollars. The Phoenix Suns aren't quite there yet. And that's the only problem I have. If Chris Paul was maybe a year or two younger and you picked him up now, then maybe with Booker, Ayton, maybe you're able to do something special there. But the West is crowded. Golden, people forget about Golden State. Golden State, I think, will be the team to beat. They got the second pick overall. They've got, you know, their core is coming back. And I don't know why people are sort of sleeping on Golden State right now. And then the other possibility is Russell Westbrook being traded to the Clippers. Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Russell Westbrook. They're going to give up a lot of their bench guys. Depth, if you want to call it that. You know, you sort of have to, you got to get those salaries aligned here. But is Russell Westbrook what the Clippers need with Kawhi and Paul George? If that's your approach and that's your answer to the Lakers and what they're going to be like, then, you know, I don't know what he does to Kawhi and Paul George. You know, Paul George has already played with Russell Westbrook. You know, they know each other. I don't know if Kawhi, is he fine with a guy who's a ball hog? I don't know. It just seems like an odd addition there if it were to happen. But that is being reported. There are a couple of outlets who are reporting that. I know ESPN is. The Ringer is reporting that as well. And then Chris Paul, you know, does Chris Paul feels like he's going to be moved because Oklahoma City is in a rebuild, even though they're a playoff team. But if you have him on the Suns, it might feel like they're a year early to pick up somebody like that. Yeah, Paul.
I got two questions for you, Dan.
All right.
Would you want Russell Westbrook, who's going to be 32, he still averages 27 points a game, but his three-point shooting is down to 25%, yeah. And he takes a lot of them still.
Yeah.
Would you want him on your team if you were a contender? Forget about the rest of your team, just him as a player, his game.
Well, I have to know what my style is. Because if you say Golden State's a contender, I don't want him on Golden State.
How about the Clippers, specifically?
Yeah. I don't know what their philosophy is. You got a new coach, Ty Lue is in there, and now you're bringing in three personalities. They already had an issue with Kawhi Leonard off the court with some of his teammates. Paul George didn't step up when you wanted him to or needed him to, but I... Unless you say, what do we have to lose here? Because after this next season, Kawhi and Paul George can walk. They're free agents. Is this enough to keep them there? Like, I got to build something where they go, we see something here. There's a future here. If not, they may go, abandon ship. Like, this didn't work out. But they've already mortgaged their future with all their draft picks. And this is the only way that they can improve their team. Because they're not going to do it through the draft. Free agency, do you want to go to the Clippers right now? Given the way the season ended? Sort of the turmoil, or at least question marks or stories that were going on behind the scenes there? Yeah, Paul.
Chris Paul is 35 years old this upcoming season.
Yeah, I know.
He's going to make $41.5 million. If you were Chris Paul and his agent, would you work and restructure to play for a contending team and get a ring, which you don't have? Or just ride it out, go where you're traded to, maybe a young team that needs some leadership and some growth, stay with the salary you got.
Well, he's not going to give up that salary.
Wouldn't he have to go to a contender?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. He's not going to give anything back. Yeah, McClellan.
I don't think you really can with salary cap, too. Like, they can't, you know, you have to match the salaries.
Yes.
I don't think you're allowed. But yeah. I'd take him in the Sixers. I would get rid of, if you could take Horford or Harris off.
Well, no, that doesn't work that way.
You got to do something. I mean, they got to take Horford.
Yeah, but nobody, the Rockets aren't going to give you Russell Westbrook to Horford.
Oh, we don't want Russell Westbrook. We keep Horford. I'm saying we. I'd say the Thunder give. You got to take Horford. You're going to have to take somebody.
Yeah. Well, the Knicks are interested in Chris Paul, and I think Russell Westbrook, of course. This is neither makes sense for the Knicks. Like the Knicks, they always do this. They always will go, let's take this guy. Yeah, he's in his mid-30s, a lot of mileage on. Let's take him. They need to go, this is who we are, and this is what we want to be, instead of always just being the Knicks. Just start from ground zero here and build it and get maybe some good draft picks. You're not going to get free agents, but if you could build it through the draft and then maybe you get a veteran who wants to be a part of something that's special there. But you don't have anything special right now. But it would be very Knicks-like for them to go, yeah, let's pay Chris Paul $42 million to come in. We have no chance of winning, but people will show up to see Chris Paul, right? No. But if you're winning, like in Milwaukee, then I could see that. And Phoenix would be an interesting destination. I don't think they're ready yet. And I'm not going to base this off the small sample size of 8 games, you know, that they won in the bubble. They were fun, but it doesn't feel like that was reality for them. And now you get back to reality, and how good a team are you? You got a really good coach. You got a couple of stars, certainly with Devin Booker. Chris Paul, I think, would be more beneficial to Milwaukee than he would be to Phoenix. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.